It's Wednesday and time for our Neighbors in Action segment, when Current State features people and organizations working to make our community a better place. This week we feature the newly launched nonprofit called the Firecracker Project. It seeks to provide therapy and support for victims of child sexual abuse. Here to tell us more about the Firecracker Project is the project's founder, the Firecracker herself, Tashmika Torok. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you for having me.
You just had your launch party last week. Tell us about the Firecracker Project. What are its main goals?
Well, the Firecracker Foundation's mission is to honor the bravery of children who have survived sexual trauma. So we are looking to provide free, quality, and consistent counseling for children who don't have access to it.
There was a very personal, very compelling, and emotional story about you in last Sunday's Lansing State Journal. You come at this with significant personal experience. Tell us your story, if you would.
I was sexually abused by my father, so I am an incest survivor as well as a sexual abuse survivor, from the ages of 6 until he passed away when I was 8. So I grew up without access to counseling, mostly because we didn't know I needed it, didn't understand the consequences of sexual trauma, especially going untreated. And so I dealt with issues of, you know, PTSD, not being able to sleep, connections with other people, depression, a lot of different things. But I didn't really understand that that was in, something that impacted me from sexual trauma.
And then one day there was a real turning point for you in your schooling. Someone came to your classroom. Tell us what happened.
When I was 9 years old, my father had been dead a year, and I had a person come to my classroom and give us the good touch, bad touch talk. And for the first time in my life, I had some type of a definition of what had happened to me, and I realized that I had been sexually abused. And my teacher, Mrs. Pease, who I absolutely adored, was there, and he, you know, the guy said, raise your hand if this has happened to you, and I didn't trust him, didn't know him from Adam, so I didn't raise my hand. But I waited, and I waited long enough for the class to settle back down, and then I called her over, and I asked her, you know, I whispered, can I talk to you in private? And she said yes, and then I told her, and her words to me immediately were, it happened to me, you're going to be okay. And so ever since that moment, between her and my mother believing me right away, and then a very beautiful line of women being able to pour good things to me over the years, I think that's how I survived.
What years were the most difficult? What did you struggle with specifically the most?
Nobody likes middle school, right? I mean, middle school, if you ask any adult, no one ever wants to go back to middle school. It's the worst time of your life. But having to go through middle school and parts of high school feeling abnormal, not understanding, you know, when people are talking about that girl who, you know, is having sex and, you know, how promiscuous she is, and then, you know, calling her horrible names, and then you're trying to pretend like you have no idea what they're talking about, because you don't want to be, you know, too virginal, but you don't want to let on that you have experienced everything. And to make it worse, you've experienced everything with your own father. So that was really difficult. And having children was difficult in some ways. You know, making sure that they are safe is an impossibility that I grapple with a lot. You know,
that is a tremendous preoccupation for you.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, I've dealt with it over the years, and I'm more comfortable with it. But that initial pregnancy and then realizing that at some point they are going to be outside of my body and have a personal experience and a life that is not connected to mine at any given time, and that I can't protect them, is a pretty tremendous burden for someone who was victimized in private for 2 years without anybody knowing.
The ruse that your father used all those years ago was to go stargazing out in the desert. You grew up in Texas, and you would go out into the desert and stargaze. I have to say, visually, one of the most compelling things about the Louise Knott Ahern's treatment of your story in Sunday's Lansing State Journal was the image of you on the front page of the paper with your Google app or your iPad app, using the Stargazer app. Talk to us about, did that represent a real resolution to your story?
I think it represents that regardless of my childhood, regardless of what I've survived, I am so grateful that I am still able to live in wonder of the stars. My father had a tremendous opportunity to ruin a lot of things for me. But what I tell people often is that he didn't own the stars. You know, they were there long before he was. So all of the things that he tried to ruin, you know, including my personal legacy and my personal story, you know, I've been able to completely turn around and enjoy and love life and love it lavishly. And that's a gift that I was able to give to myself in a lot of ways and that other people who loved me were able to give me. So, I mean, the stars, Orion is my favorite constellation, always will be. But, yeah, my father taught it to me. And so there is that undercurrent of my personal story that will always be there.
If I have it correct, one of the interesting details of Sunday's story as well was that you were a breech baby.
Yeah.
Born facing up.
I wasn't born breech, but I was born facing up, and they call babies like that stargazing. And I actually didn't know that. When I named the event, I named it specifically about stargazing, about being able to live in wonder of the stars. But when I was talking to my mother and doing research, my mother said to me that I was actually, she reminded me of something that she told me before and that I'd been born stargazing.
When you went through your therapy, what did it entail exactly?
You know, actually, I went to therapy at first for marriage counseling. You know, me and my husband went after every child, and a lot of that was connected to having a baby, and we've already talked about that a little bit. But around the third time, I started to realize that there were things from my past that were directly affecting our marriage. And so we started to go separately, and I went specifically to deal with issues related to the sexual trauma. So a lot of talking about memories, a lot of realizations about, you know, you feel dirty and kind of coming clean, you know, and feeling like you releasing that imagery of yourself as a dirty individual or someone who's broken or you know, although you will always have scars, it's not something that negates who you are and what you're able to do in your life. You know, and one of the most impactful things was even being shown basically a chart of what sexual trauma looks like from its most severe forms to, you know, what people would consider mild. And, of course, sexual trauma is severe and the consequences are severe regardless.
But you had symptoms?
Well, not symptoms. It was mostly like what acts had been perpetrated against me.
Oh.
And I had no idea that my what I'd experienced was on the higher end of severe trauma. There's very little things on that chart that had not happened to me. And so I felt justified. You know, I felt like I'd gone through all of these things thinking that why can I not get over this? Like, why is this such a huge deal in my life? And why do I keep going back to this? And a lot of it was because I was severely sexually traumatized and I didn't even know until I was 30 that there was even a chart that existed.
Oh, my. How do you encourage other victims to speak out, to do something?
Well, I tell my story. I tell my story. And I get messages all the time when I first started telling my story that I can't, you know, women would send me messages that would say, you know, I can't speak out because of these reasons, so I appreciate your voice. And so that's one way. I think people who have their own personal reasons why they can't tell their story really appreciate hearing it. Also, I really believe, and especially in the course of the past weeks, that there are people like me that are kind of waiting in the wings that really know this struggle on a deep level and haven't really found a place to use that energy, you know, that to find a way to make something good. And I'm hoping that the Firecracker Foundation will build a community of survivors and advocates that can kind of come together on behalf of children that are living the same struggle that we've survived, basically.
I can't imagine how profound that good touch, bad touch lesson that day must have been as you sat out there as an 8-year-old girl.
Yeah.
That is, I can't get my head around that.
It was just, you know, it was almost the same as seeing that chart for the first time. You know, you just go through, especially at 9, especially before the age of Google and Oprah, you know, you don't know what sexual abuse is. You shouldn't at the age of 9. And so the first time somebody names it, it's almost like being diagnosed with a serious disease that you've been dealing with for years, but you didn't know the symptoms.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden now you know. And I always tell people I would choose knowledge over anything. Like, if I could just know what it is so I can deal with it, that's better than not knowing.
Better than ignorance.
Yeah, that's right. Definitely.
What are your ultimate goals for the Firecracker project?
My ultimate goal in 2014 is to provide 5 children with high-quality, consistent counseling. So that would be $100 per month for a full year for each child. On top of that, I want to raise money so that we can be sustainable for many, many years moving forward. My goal is $75,000 in 2014. I'd love to be able to provide arts and sports counseling, or not counseling, but programs, so art therapy, music therapy, involved in physical activities, which will build on the work that we provide them in counseling. Mm-hmm. And then my dreams go on and on forever for this foundation. I would love to have survivors that are working with our organization to help us create these programs. I would love to have, you know, group therapy sessions and for children who are survivors, but also for their parents to help them work through the many issues that they're going to have to deal with over time.
How would you assess existing programs, the programs that are already out there to help people?
You know, the one wonderful thing about living in Lansing is that we love our children, right? I mean, we've got so many great programs out there for kids. We've got Ellie's Place. We've got, you know, Reach Art Studio. We've all of these beautiful, beautiful programs. The one thing that I feel like is missing and is that it's not, for counseling specifically, children who don't have access to insurance can't afford this type of counseling. And most children who are abused are living in poverty. So their parents don't have access to this kind of care.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that we are providing something that's long-term, which is also something when it comes to counseling, it's usually 2 to 3 months based on what programs can fund. So I want to identify individual children and provide them with the counseling they need for at least a year.
Yours is an extraordinary story. We thank you very much for joining us. Tashmika Torok is the founder of Lansing's newest nonprofit, the Firecracker Project. Thank you, Tashmika, and good luck.
Thank you.
We could always use more nominations, and we know that there are great people and organizations out there that are doing excellent work. We just don't know about them. If you'd like one to be featured on our Neighbors in Action segment, please send us an email to currentstate@wkar.org. Put Neighbors in Action in the subject line and tell us why you think they should be featured for the great work that they do.